You're listening to Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. Before desegregation in the armed forces in 1948, very few African Americans were given the opportunity to attend West Point. My next guest started his journey toward West Point prior to that desegregation. He's written a book about that and his military career, but it's also a book about family and faith. The title is The Black Knight, An African American Family's Journey from West Point, A Life of Duty, Honor, and Country. The author is Clifford Worthy, and he joins us now. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
The foreword of your book was written by the recently departed John Dingell Jr. What was your connection to the former representative?
John Dingell Jr. was the son of John Dingell Sr., who was the one who appointed me to West Point in 1949.
Yeah, John Dingell Sr. was a congressman until 1955,
yes.
Historically, how were the handful of African-Americans who went to West Point treated?
They were what was called silenced. No one spoke to them. They stayed in a room by themselves. They ate by themselves. The only contact they had with the other cadets was through academics and military training. But other than that, they were isolated, so to speak.
Having heard that, I'm wondering what your time was like at West Point.
Well, I think West Point took seriously the edict that came from President Truman. In 1948, Truman integrated the armed forces. Before that time, units in the military were segregated. Even black units were commanded by white officers. So it was that was the situation. Now, when I got there, I think West Point had got the message, even though there had been resistance, obviously, at that time. But I never felt any serious problem with racism while I was there.
And that, you got there in 1949. The primary title is The Black Knight. What does that mean?
Well, the motto or the, much like Michigan Wolverines, cadets were
so
called
the cadets the Black Knights.
Black Knights.
You did run into some Jim Crow incidents while you're early in the service, not in the Army base itself, but traveling in the South and the West. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me about one of those experiences?
Yeah, one of those was we were traveling, going from Detroit at that time to Camp Carson. It was called Camp Carson. Now it's Fort Carson. It took us through a little town called Clayton, New Mexico. When we got there, we needed gas, and so I stopped at a gas station, asked the attendant if where we could get something to eat. Clearly, he saw that we were black, but he didn't indicate it made a difference to him, so he just told us the name of a restaurant, a local restaurant, that we were there. I still had my New York license plate on my car, and so we went to this restaurant, and as I walked in the front door, it was a very cheery, lively group of people were there, and they were having a good time, typically. But as soon as I walked in the door, everything went dead silent. Even the people, the black people who were keeping the place clean stopped and stared. Well, I knew, kind of figured I was in trouble. Well, I left my wife out in the car because back in those days, you had to take those kinds of precautions, particularly in the South. The lady that served me, she flabbergasted that I would even be there. She said, "Don't you know you're not supposed to be here, boy? You know, you go around to the back." And she was really upset. For some strange reason, the manager or the owner said, "Go ahead and give him what he wants." And that really set her off. And she threw the hamburgers at me that I had ordered. And as I was about to leave, you could hear the chairs in there. And as I walked out the door, there was people clearly following me outside. I went back, got in the car, drove, and I knew I was in trouble because if I could look behind me, there's a pickup truck, so the lights start flashing, and there was like a convoy of people, a truck behind me. I couldn't get any help because if it was a chief of police there, he probably would have been leading the convoy. Anyway, I started to drive away, and they followed me down the road. But I got to a point, and for some reason, they stopped and started turning around. But I assumed it was because I was near the border. And But anyway, that was a scary moment because I had no idea what would have happened had I not been at that particular spot.
Did you face any kind of racism in the military in the 1950s or 1960s?
Not that I'm aware of. Now, I know that's hard to believe. Kind of subtly, yes. For instance, during the summer as a cadet, we would go to different bases for training purposes. And I remember being in El Paso, Texas, going there and going across the border to Juarez with my classmates, being refused service even there in Mexico. And clearly it wasn't the service, it was just the policy at that time. So there were other similar instances like that. There used to be social programs by these little towns that we would visit. And then one time we were going to one little town and they were giving a party for the cadets as they came in. They bussed in the girls from the town for the cadets. But in our case, we were given staff cars, pick up our dates, which for a change was to our advantage. But that kind of thing took place.
Yeah, you mentioned in the book, as I was reading, that there were a couple of bases where you were suddenly found that all of the black families lived in one block on base, things like that. And I just thought, wow, that's hard to excuse after desegregation, right? You did a couple of stints overseas. One was in Germany during the Cold War in 1957. Mm-hmm. The other was in Vietnam in 1968. Mm-hmm. What did you learn from those experiences?
I learned, one, how resourceful the American GIs are. You know, it wasn't the Hollywood type shoot 'em up type things you should see about Vietnam. I saw that too, but it was just how American soldiers were able to cope with whatever the situation was, find a solution to whatever problem they were faced with. That was one thing that impressed me, and there are many others.
Let's talk about your family, because your family, for the most part, moved from Army base to Army base. Of course, they didn't go to Vietnam, but they did go with you to Germany and spent some time there. Your first child, Mark, was born with special needs, and being in the military, that was difficult for you and especially difficult for your wife, Lillian. Lillian passed away fairly early in your life. You also have two daughters, Kim and Jennifer. Most of us know about Kim Worthy because of her work as Wayne County prosecutor. So Lillian died while your daughters were in school, Jennifer in high school, Kim in college. How did that affect you and your kids?
Well, unfortunately, my wife came up with a medical condition that she was losing, her balance was deteriorating, and she had some difficulty in negotiating steps. And anyway, our next door neighbor at the time was a neurosurgeon, and he examined her and decided that she had undue pressure in the vertebrae. And so he recommended some surgery, but he wanted me to get a second opinion, so he sent me to the University of Oklahoma Medical Center in Oklahoma City, which is about 100 miles away. And the doctor there just decided the same thing and decided for surgery. I mention that because at that time, Kim was at the University of Michigan. And based on the information I had at that time, I didn't see there was any need for her to leave school to come to Oklahoma where we were. And that might have been a bad decision because Kim, when she lost her mother, which what happened, they did the surgery. She was paralyzed from the neck down, and they went back in and did the same thing, but it never helped. And of course, Kim was upset with me because I was never told about it, and the kids. I guess it was the minimal effect on my daughter, Jennifer, at the time. But later on, you could see that she had missed her mom. She was 14 years old when her mom died. That was a problem for her. And, of course, for Kim was a problem because she felt that she should have known. In fact, she really wanted to accuse the surgeon of malpractice. Back in those days, you just took the surgeon's word. You didn't think about those things much.
As we've been talking, you've been rising in the ranks. By this point, you're a full bird colonel. Mm-hmm. You worked in the Pentagon, including serving with the Undersecretary of the Army. In all likelihood, you were on your way to becoming a general, but you retired. Why?
Well, I retired because I had a 14-year-old daughter and a son that was needed help, and I just I felt that I could be going all around the world with those with children who needed help and where help was not always available. And I thought best for them was for me to retire. So I did.
So I thoroughly enjoyed the book. I'm wondering, as an author, what do you want us to take from this book more than anything else?
I want young people, particularly young African-American kids, to know that sometimes things just happen. Sometimes opportunities are thrust upon you, much like it was for me. And you've got to be ready to stand in and take advantage of it. And then also I want them to understand that bad things happen. And I've mentioned bad things. We've talked about them here. People are, you know, particularly back in those days, that was pre-Martin Luther King days. But there were good people.
Yeah, we're not completely away from them.
Yeah. But there were some wonderful people that helped me along the way that were not at that time. And the doors opened for me, and I think I wanted the kids to know you have to take some risks sometime. And I was fortunate enough to do that and ended up with assignments like being sent to the University of Arizona for 2 years to get a master's in mechanical engineering, going to commanding a field artillery battalion in Vietnam, going to the Pentagon, and being a part of the Chief of Research and Development for a while, and then becoming one of the military assistants to the Undersecretary of the Army. Had tremendous assignments.
Yeah, those doors open, but you have to walk through,
through them. That's right. And yeah. I could go on and on. But you've got to walk through them. You've got to be willing to stand and take a chance and take advantage of those opportunities and treat them as achievable, not just saying, well, I'll never make it. You can make it.
We've been speaking to Clifford Worthy. He's written his life story in the book, The Black Knight, An African-American Family's Journey from West Point, A Life of Duty, Honor, and Country. Sir, thanks very much for sharing your book with us, and thanks for coming in.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.